Hey, Moving Forward listeners, I'm excited to announce that I will be teaching a summer session of my writing and self-publishing class through the Johns Hopkins Odyssey program that starts Saturday, June 15th, and will run for 6 weeks. In this course, I'll cover a step-by-step process to ideate, plan, and write your book so you can get it done and published. For course and registration information, head over to bemovingforward.com. The class is open to all, including nonfiction and fiction writers, with special discounts for Hopkins alum. However, space is limited, so enroll now and let's start moving forward this summer on June 15th. With episode 466. I hope everyone is having a great week, getting ready for another weekend. And today we're going to continue on with our look at writing your book. But before we begin, I want to welcome any new listeners to the podcast. We're getting new listeners every week. It's really awesome. I do recommend if you're new to the podcast, check out episode 000. It's the updated trailer that'll give you the background on Moving Forward, how to approach the episodes because there's so many different seasons. And what's nice about this is that you can create your own Moving Forward journey. As I've been podcasting for many years and doing this now going on 11 seasons, there are many different types of episodes, and some of the seasons are actually theme-based, and you can pick and choose the episodes that speak to you. I do collections. I have interviews. There's many different types of episodes, so you can find the content that really resonates with you. Also, as a reminder, I have a newsletter. That is where the podcast is now housed. I migrated from a website to a newsletter, and you can sign up for free. Issues are delivered every Friday morning. And if you want to sign up, just go over to bemovingforward.com. Also, you can check out the newsletter as well. Right now, I've got the prior issues and the current issues that are coming out are pretty open, so you can check them out before you subscribe. All right, today we're going to talk about editing. So last week I talked about the concept of the sloppy first draft. In fact, I just covered it last week with my current cohort of writers in my writing class, which, by the way, fantastic group. If any of you are listening to this, I just have to give my hats off to the level of care and the thoughtful questions that you're asking. And I really appreciate it. It really does make a difference. But the sloppy first draft, I think, is one of the more controversial aspects, at least in terms of the way I teach book writing and others as well. But I'm a big proponent of getting the ideas out and not using the editing side of your brain to curb your enthusiasm and your creativity too early on. That being said, once you are done the sloppy first draft, so once you have gotten all the ideas out and it may look very messy, then it is time to talk about editing. Editing does play an important part, and that's what I'm going to cover today. So in the first half of today's episode, I want to talk about self-editing because I think that is important. You're going to need to go through your draft and start to add structure, shape. And this is where you can let your editing side of the brain take over and really clean up the mess. You know, start to mold the clay, if you will, and to scrape off any of the excess that just doesn't fit with the book, but really give it form, syntax, grammar, all of that good stuff. So I recommend it once you get to the stage in which you're doing a second draft. Now, depending on the writing tool you used and the methodology you use for a second draft, editing may end up being its own process, or it may be part of drafting a second draft. So what do I mean by that? So let's say you handwrote your first draft, or you used something like Voice. As I mentioned before, you're going to need to get it to an electronic form for your subsequent drafts. And I recommend you do it starting with your second. And one way you can do this is through literal transcription. As I've talked about, I don't recommend you do this yourself. If you're going to do a literal transcription of your work, either voice or handwritten, I recommend you either use some form of technology, such as Google Voice to Text, or you hire a transcription service, because doing it yourself, I think, is just way too tedious, and I think it's going to take too long. Unless, as I said, the one exception, and it's a very narrow exception, is if you happen to be, by profession, let's say a trained court stenographer, where you are a very, very fast typist and you can do a lot of shorthand, that sort of thing. If you already by trade or by skill or by profession do this sort of thing, transcription work, then yes, it would be fine for you to do it. But I'm guessing that's not going to be the majority of you listening to this, and certainly not most of the people that I've met who are writing books. So I recommend, if you're going to go the literal transcription route, you have some outsourcing of that to do, either with technology or using a third-party service. Now, that said, the alternate way to do this is to use a rough draft, say from handwritten or voice, as a reference point. You could reread your handwritten draft or listen to your voice recordings and then write a second draft. Now, if you're going to go that route, I recommend you still keep it a little bit raw. I don't think you should edit it too much, but this is where you can start to add some more shape and form to it. So here you can pay a little more attention to structure. So the first draft, that sloppy draft, is just getting the ideas out. Now you can start to reshape it, reform it. And by the time you get to this point, you'll be able to naturally do that. All right, for those of you who've written, say, with a third-party device, we're using your computer, so you have a direct electronic form of your rough draft, then here, I think you can start to reshape things. And one of the ways you're going to want to reshape it is to really look at your outline and see how well your rough draft fits with your outline and start reshaping it. There are certain things you're going to find on a macro level that you may want to move certain things around, paragraphs or even certain sections. You may realize as you're reading through your rough draft that you may even want to change the order of some things. And this will go back to your framework, your smart outline. You may realize, well, actually, this chapter kind of works better here. So the nice thing is having a smart outline is that you can move it around. Now, hopefully you won't have to do too much of that. But I have found when I'm writing books that sometimes I'll have to move one or two chapters around just because it ends up flowing better, or parts of chapters more often, just little segments. Something I thought belonged in chapter 2 works better in chapter 10, as an example. So that's the macro level. On the micro level is what you were resisting doing in your rough draft, which is all the typos and all the basic grammar stuff. That's where you're going to start letting that side of your brain loose and just going to work on it. And I do recommend clean it up. And as you're cleaning it up, you may want to rephrase things. And this is where you can start thinking about, am I articulating this in the way that I really want to? And that's one of the things that I really encourage writers not to do in the rough draft, is to overthink, am I articulating this in the best way possible? Just get the rough version of the idea out. Don't ruminate so much over, am I picking the right word? Am I phrasing this in the correct way? Do that in the rewrite. Because if you do that in the beginning, first of all, the idea is not fully cooked yet. And so I believe that part of articulating it in a book may necessitate with time. You may have to have a little bit of time. So the first time you're expressing it may not be the most elegant or articulate or even correct way that you want to state it, but just get it out and don't overthink, okay, I need to reword this because this is not what I want to say. Just leave it, get the rough draft done. Now you can go back, especially since you've had a little bit of time with it, and here you can start developing that idea further. And hopefully you've cooked it a little bit more. And I'm going to use that analogy. You've cooked the idea a little more, bit more, since you got it down on paper. And now that you're going through the rewrite, you can start thinking about, am I articulating this in the way that I want to? I recommend go through a self-edit process. Now, a question that comes up, which is a tricky one, is how many self-edits should I do before I work with an editor, if I'm going to work with an editor? And I'll talk about that in the second half. I would say clean it up as best as you can. And I don't think there's a number and hard or fast number, but I usually, in my experience working with my brilliant editor, Megan, who I've mentioned on the show before, I've had her on the show before, but I've usually done at least two passes on my own, sometimes three, depending on how much work I have to do before I actually let her do her first kind of initial pass on it, just to give me her thoughts. So I recommend do at least a couple of passes. I would not recommend handing in a sloppy first draft to an editor. It's not ready. Remember, one of the things that I said is that your sloppy first draft is not meant to be polished, pristine, published, or public. And public means sharing it with someone else. It's just you getting the ideas out. So do at least a couple of passes before you hand it off. And part of that is also, the sloppier the draft you hand to an editor, the more work they're going to have to do with it. And inevitably, that's going to be more expensive. And we'll talk a little bit about that in the second half. All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about the next level of editing, working with a professional editor. Hey, Moving Forward listeners, here's today's Poshmark power tip. Style tags will make your listing more searchable. Add up to three, including ones for color, style, or even occasion. You can use popular ones that are pre-filled or create your own to enhance its search engine optimization. For more Poshmark seller tips, check out the Poshmark Guide for Individuals and Small Businesses, which is available on Amazon in paperback, Kindle, and as an audiobook on Audible and Apple Audiobooks. Start learning and moving forward today. All right, we're moving forward with episode 466, and now we're into the editing process of your book. So, working with an editor, let's talk about this. First of all, I want to talk about a very important consideration, and that is, and I want to dispel this notion that if you self-publish a book as opposed to say going to a hybrid publisher or even a traditional publisher, that you're doing everything on your own. And that is actually not, in fact, the case. It might be. However, when you are writing and self-publishing a book, I don't recommend, if at all possible, that you do everything yourself. Because the fact of the matter is, you may be strong in certain things, but not others. That being said, let's talk about cost, because that is an important consideration. And in fact, I talk about this in my class because I've got students who are at all different levels, but also all different budgets. So I firmly believe if you want to write a book, you have the capability to do it. The tools are there. Most of the tools that I've talked about, you either have access to or can have access to at little or no cost. But when it comes to things like editing, and we'll talk about cover design on a separate episode, but when it comes to things like editing, that is a cost consideration. So what if you can't afford an editor? And that's a real possibility, depending on where you are. Maybe this is your first book and you're just starting out and you don't have a lot of money to spend on it. Well, I've got a couple of suggestions. Number one, don't let that stop you from getting your first book out. I firmly believe if you have a book in you and you want to get it out, get it out. And if that requires you doing your own editing or asking someone that maybe you know will be a good editor and maybe they're willing to do it pro bono for you, in other words, for free, see if that's a possibility. Don't let the fact that you can't afford to hire an editor stop you from finishing your book and getting it out there. May not be the best work you can do, and it may not be the most polished and professional, but that's probably going to be the case anyway with your first book. I recommend just get your first book out, and later on, if you decide to write more books, you can always, once you're at that place where you can afford to hire an editor, and that's part of what this process is. It's not just writing one book. For many of you, once you have a taste of writing a book, you're going to want to write more. So part of this is looking towards an eye of improving. So I think it's perfectly fine. And that is the beauty of self-publishing, is that theoretically you can do everything. I don't recommend it if at all possible, but if you don't have a choice, then just do it. I would rather get my first book out, and then if I need to later on, especially with self-publishing, if I feel like, well, it's not the best it could be, I can always revisit it. I can release a second edition in the future, and maybe at that point, if I could afford an editor, I'll hire an editor and really rework it. So don't feel like this should stop you from getting your book out. And also the other thing I want to mention is that if you have trouble curbing the editing while you write habit for your first draft, chances are you're probably a pretty decent editor yourself. You may not be the best, you may not be a professional editor, but you'll probably do a pretty good job. And the fact that I've had so many students say, it's really hard for me not to edit while I write, because that's one of the things I train them to do in during the class, that means that you're probably a pretty strong editor. So give yourself some credit and do the best you can. The other thing is, you may have a friend, someone in your network who would love to work with you on your book, and maybe you won't be able to afford to pay them, or you can come up with some creative arrangements such as, you can split part of the proceeds with them, that sort of thing. So there are a lot of things you can do, and you may find that someone who is interested in becoming an editor but has never edited a book before, this may be a good opportunity for you to kind of work with them and have a win-win situation. So don't let budget stop you from getting your first book done. That being said, if you do have the budget, I would say out of all the different aspects of the book to outsource, specifically things like cover design, putting together the manuscript, which I believe you can mostly do on your own. But the cover design, many of you may not be graphic designers or may not have experience with that. And so oftentimes people who are writing their own books will hire a cover designer. We're going to talk about cover design in a future episode, as well as editing. I would say if I had to choose which of the services to outsource, it would be editing. Editing will probably be the most expensive part of the book. It's where most of your budget is going to go, but it is worth it to hire a decent editor to get your book in as good a shape as possible. And I can say without hesitation that my books are, as you know, whatever success I've had in writing these books and reviews, positive reviews, that sort of thing, credit is so much due to working with a great editor who just not only helped me get the books into the shape that they needed to be, but also helped me become a better writer. That's the other thing. A good editor is going to force you to become a better writer. All right. So let's first of all talk about some of the basics. Well, there are two basic kinds of editing. So there's line editing. Line editing is really where the editor goes through the manuscript and they'll kind of make sure that the words on the page are conveying what you're trying to say. And they will also kind of help you shape up and clean up the grammar and spelling. You should try to do as much of that as your own. And of course, we've got things like spell check and grammar check to do that. But a professional editor will help you clean that up even further. But line editing is also about syntax, about voice, that sort of thing. So it's really more on the technical level. Content editing, in contrast, is really more about the subject of the book and whether or not the subject matter is conveyed properly, especially if it's a complicated subject that you're conveying, say, to a layman. So sometimes you may have to hire a separate content editor. So I'll give you an example. Let's say you're writing a very technical book, maybe on biochem for biochem scientists. That's going to be a very technical book, and you're not going to necessarily need you may need a line editor, but a line editor is not going to be able to give you great feedback on the subject matter unless they know the subject matter. So in that instance, you may need a separate content editor who is a subject matter expert who can help kind of read through the book in the eyes of your reader. Now, that's not always the case. you don't always have to have two separate editors. And in fact, Megan, who I've worked with on several of my books, has served as both line and content editing. If your book is written on a specific subject, but it is not addressed to a subject matter expert, let's say a book on, for example, the book I wrote on Poshmark is actually aimed at people who don't have any experience selling online or have never sold on Poshmark. And so Megan, in many ways, was a great content editor for that because in some ways she's the target audience, someone who may want to sell on Poshmark or doesn't have experience selling on Poshmark. So she could give me the feedback on whether or not what I'm conveying and communicating in the book and ultimately teaching makes sense. So think about it in terms of that. All right, in terms of the workflow, there are many different ways that an editor can work with a reader or a writer, excuse me. I will just give you my experience in working with Megan. And again, I'm just going to sing her praises here. But what she does is really, I think, I've been spoiled. I don't know that I could ever work with another editor because I've spoken to authors who've worked with many different types of editors, editors who were very expensive and some who had very great credentials from publishing houses and things like that. But, and some of them have said that, you know, the editing was good, but it wasn't, you know, it could have been better. And I'll say what I'll talk a little bit more about that just by explaining what Megan does in terms of her workflow. She, first of all, will do an initial pass on the book, meaning that she'll read through the manuscript and give me some high-level notes, give me her assessment on what needs to be worked on. And then if we end up working together, in other words, if we sign a contract, then she will actually do several passes on the book, and she uses a color-coded highlighting system that indicates to me whether or not there are certain line problems, whether something's passive voice or whether it's a grammatical issue. She has several color codes for that. She'll also, because editors can and should be very brutal in their assessments, she'll also highlight things that are positive, things that she thinks are very well stated. In terms of the content portion, she will give very thorough notes. But one thing that Megan did that was so helpful and maybe, you know, above and beyond, because I don't know that every editor does this, is that she would schedule weekly or biweekly calls with me to go over what she has just edited. And she would do maybe a couple of chapters per clip, and we would catch up on a call and then go over that. And I find that so helpful. And it allowed me to map out what I needed to work on. So we actually did this such that when she would work on, say, three chapters and then review them with me, I would work on those three chapters and she would proceed to the next three. And we did this over a period of maybe about 2 or 3 months. And it worked out really great. And then she would do another pass on the book. And then one thing I will mention, I'll talk more about this when you get to the publishing stage, is that right before you publish, or when you're getting ready to start the publishing stage, one of the things you're going to want to do is order a physical proof copy. And what I do as a best practice is I have a proof copy sent to Megan, and I'll order one for myself, and then we'll both read through them. And it's valuable for the editing process because you will catch things in the physical copy that you missed just looking at your computer screen dozens of times. And then we'll regroup, do one more pass, and then that will give me the roadmap for the final edits. So that's kind of the workflow, but not every editor does that. So I would recommend, what I would recommend is if you are vetting editor candidates, kind of get a sense of what their workflow is, whether they do calls, whether they do emails, whether they do check-ins, whether they will do a couple of chapters and give you the feedback, or are they the type of editors who will just kind of work through the whole book and kind of give you a list of notes. And there are many different styles of editors in terms of workflow. And my recommendation is find one that works for you. For me, the way Megan had her process really was, I'd say, top-notch. And I, again, I don't know that I could ever work with an editor who doesn't do that. So, you know, if I write more books, and I think I've got at least one or two more in me that I want to work on over the next couple of years, then Megan is definitely going to be my go-to. But short of that, if not, then I would want to find someone whose style is very similar to that. All right, so one of the things you want to do is, if you're vetting editor candidates, you want to find out what their workflow is. So that's just all to say, find out how they work with their authors, how often they communicate with them, what the feedback is like, how accessible are they? So kind of get the lay of the land with them. And then from there, you're going to want to formulate an agreement. And I do recommend have an agreement. Even though Megan and I have known each other for many years, even though we're friends, we did a formal contract, and it just keeps things very professional and formal. And I do recommend that in terms of the pay rate, the deliverables, all of that. Have that all documented. All right. Now, in terms of cost, the cost of an editor is going to range. And this is where it can get a little tricky, figuring out how expensive an editor is. It's probably one of the most frequently asked questions I get in my class. And in fact, Megan, who's going to be guest lecturing tonight, for any of you who are from my class right now, she gets this question a lot. But I will say it's a hard question to answer, because most of the time it depends on two things. It depends on the book. And when I say the book, what is the book and how long is it? And how much work needs to be done? In other words, depending on the stage where the book is, when you end up working with an editor, if it needs a lot of cleanup and a lot of work, that's going to be more time, and therefore it's probably going to be more expensive. Whereas if you've done a lot of the self-edit work, then it will be less time and therefore less expensive. So there are a lot of factors that go into this. In terms of pricing, editors, I've seen editors that will charge per word or per project. There are different rates for line versus content, or if you want to do both. So really, there's no one right answer. I mean, if someone were to say, what is the average cost of an editor? I don't know that I can answer that, because it really does come down to the book. And so just from my experience, what Megan will do is she will read through the manuscript, give it a one pass, and then from there she will basically figure out the amount of work that needs to go into it, and from there come up with the price. And thus far, you know, I have to say that, you know, it's worked out very well. I mean, I can say without a doubt, editing is not cheap, but it is well worth every penny. All right. Let's talk about where you can find an editor for hire. So I was lucky in that I met Megan in business school, and she has a very strong writing background. And it's funny, we got into this conversation years before I thought about ever writing a book. And she actually had mentioned to me that one of her bucket list goals was to edit a book. It wasn't to write a book, because she's a very strong writer, but it was to edit a book. And I just thought that was really interesting. So when I did end up writing my first book, she was one of the first people that came to mind. So I reached out to her, and it worked out beautifully. And she's edited several of my books and several other authors' books as well since then. So she's gotten her bucket list goal done and then some. I had the benefit of finding someone in my own network. So you can certainly do that. You may have someone in your network who you can work with, who would be willing to edit your book. I do recommend pick someone from your network who you know will do a good job. And having worked with her on several group projects in business school, I saw firsthand how good she was at both writing and editing. So I had firsthand experience with that. Short of that, there are many places you can go to find freelance editors. There are tons of them out there. I'll just, you know, off the top of my head, you can go to a place like Fiverr or Upwork. You could put out a project description of your book and see what kind of bids you get from different freelance editors. And then from there, you can see what their rates are, what their workflow is. So there are many different third-party sites you could go to find an editor to hire. And the benefit of going through a third-party site is that you have kind of a formal platform in which you can come up with an agreement and just kind of do a work for hire. A question that I kind of alluded to, but I'm going to directly address: do you need to hire someone who used to work for a big publisher? Not necessarily. I mean, I think it's a nice to have, but keep in mind that editors who used to work for big publishing houses are probably going to be a lot more expensive, and not all of them are going to do a great job. I'm sure many of them will do a fantastic job, but just keep in mind, don't just hire someone just because they've got great credentials. You really want to understand what their editing process is. And I'll tell you, I took a chance on Megan, who had never formally edited a book, but I knew was a great editor from having worked with her and having seen some of her work. And it was one of the best decisions I ever made in terms of my writing, because she was fantastic. And she now is an experienced editor with several books under her belt. And so I know that she's a very good editor, and that she is also within my budget and all those types of factors. So taking a chance on a new editor may actually be a great way to go. You're just going to have to vet and make sure that they will do they'll do a good job, and that they work well with you, because every author is going to be a little bit different too. So the workflow that worked with me may not necessarily work with you. So just kind of keep that in mind. So you don't necessarily have to go find someone who has, you know, 100 credentials or something like that. That can be helpful. It may or may not be great. I've talked to authors who have had mixed experiences, but that's true of anything, right? So just kind of keep that in mind, and don't just go by whether or not they used to work for a big publisher as your only criteria. It's fine if you want that, but I don't think it should be your only criteria. It's more important that you understand what their workflow is. Maybe if they're willing to give you names of authors who they've worked with, who can kind of give you feedback, sort of like a reference, you know, that sort of thing. But again, I was lucky that I found a great editor, and not even intentionally. I was just by serendipity, a great editor from my network. All right. One more thing I'm going to mention. By the time you get to this stage, and especially if you've done your own self-edits, you may feel like, well, you know what? My manuscript is so good because I put so much work into it that I bet this editor is going to say there's nothing that needs to be done. I'm going to disabuse you of that right now, because you need to have a thick skin and an open mind, because a good editor, or a great editor, and I speak from experience, is going to go through your manuscript and give you very, very specific notes, and they're going to give you suggestions. And some of those suggestions may bruise your ego a little bit, so you do have to have a thick skin. They may tell you things. You may think that you've written the most brilliant paragraph or sentence, and they may tell you, I think this needs to go. Now, ultimately, it is up to you. An editor does not write your book. So I will tell you, I will wrap this up by saying an editor doesn't write your book. They don't tell you what to do. They give you suggestions. It's ultimately up to you, if you're self-publishing, to take those suggestions. But I would say, in my experience, that even when Megan gave me suggestions that at first knee-jerk reaction, I was like, oh, I don't know if I want to do that. I don't know if I want to change that, or I don't know if I want to get rid of this passage or paragraph. I would say 99.9% of the time I followed her advice, even begrudgingly, and it ended up making the book better. So sometimes you'll have to put your ego aside, listen to the feedback of your editor, and sometimes you're going to have to just kind of go with it. And it may not be until later in hindsight that you see, you know what, that was the right decision. So be prepared for that. All right. That's about it in terms of working with an editor. There's a lot more to it. I've just kind of scratched the surface, but I wanted to kind of go over the basics. Have a great weekend. Remember, head over to bemovingforward.com if you want to check out prior episodes, if you want to check out my books and my newsletter. All right, I will be back next week. For more information, head over to bemovingforward.com. The views expressed by any featured guests are not necessarily those of the host, the program, or affiliates. Moving Forward is produced by John Lim and bemovingforward.com. All rights reserved.